The following is a paid advertisement of St. Anthony Hospital Orthopedics. References to any specific product, services, or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by St. Anthony Hospital, Carroll Broadcasting, or its advertisers. The views expressed by the host or guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Welcome to the St. Anthony Hospital Orthopedic Show with Dr. Richard Godding. Dr. Godding specializes in joint preservation, reconstruction, and replacement surgery, and brings over 25 years of orthopedic excellence to St. Anthony Hospital and to the Carroll area. For more information about Dr. Godding, his practice, or St. Anthony Orthopedics, go to stanthonyhospital.org or make an appointment by calling 712-794-5536.
Good Sunday morning, Iowa. It's Dr. Rick Godding. Thank you for choosing to spend some time with me here today. And this spring has been quite a yard management situation for me. Just been every weekend. Well, there's just so much stuff. I have a yard that is has a lot of trees, and so there's just a lot of stuff. And I've had these young boys coming and helping me, so it's been fun. We go out there, and they're at the point now that I can kind of assign them a task, and they just go do it. Mostly mulching, but moving some dirt, planting some flowers, I plant some roses, that kind of stuff. So Sunday of last weekend, I wasn't done in the yard till 7 o'clock. So it was a long yard day. I mean, I didn't start till about 1:30, but still, that's on a Sunday afternoon. That's a lot. But we got a lot of work done, and then there's still a lot to do. It's just that time of year, and I know a lot of people getting out and gardening. Of course, most of the farmers that I know are in the field planting, and yeah, it's just that renewal. It's amazing, the whole spring renewal. That's one thing when I lived in Hawaii that I did miss. I don't think I missed it enough to suffer through February lovingly, but... You know, in Hawaii, you have the rainy season and the dry season. And the dry season is a little bit warmer, maybe 5-10 degrees warmer is all. And the rainy season, I think I heard thunder one time in the entire, and maybe I saw lightning twice the whole time I was in Kauai. So they don't really have, you know, these magnificent Midwestern summer and late spring thunderstorms that are just wild events. They don't really have those there. And I guess the big change that affects people that live there is the surf. Surf is big on the south shore in the summer and big on the north shore in the winter. But the south shore never gets big like the north shore gets big. Like, you know, you need to be virtually a pro to go out, you know, 20, 30 foot waves. South shore didn't often get too big for me to go out, but there were a few times where that's a little big. This was back when I was doing a lot of surfing, of course. But yeah, so it's that change that when you do live in a tropical area like that, you don't get that. There's just like this raw energy to spring and things that haven't been tended to or getting tended to. And, you know, one thing I haven't talked about in a while is my carnivore diet progress. And, well, so overall, I had lost 50 pounds. Almost 60, and I've gained 10 of that back, and it's kind of been wobbling. And part of it is, well, look, I mean, it's just harder to do the type of workout stuff that I like to do. Like, I really got into sprinting, and I've just started that back up, although my foot's been kind of hurting, so I've been slowing down on that. And you might think, well, sprinting, that seems like it would be hard on it. Well, it is, but I mean, I might sprint 10 seconds 10 times, so 100 seconds of sprinting. The rest of it is, you know, trying to catch my breath and not fall over and then walk. You usually sprint hills. Now, I wouldn't do long hill runs, you know, where I was jogging 15, 20 minutes up a slight grade, but a quick little jog. And this is, everybody's an individual. I think I'm going to guess most people don't need to be sprinting, but it really helped me shave off some weight. There's something about sprinting that really engages your testosterone and all of your endorphins and everything, and really gets just the body's chemistry moving along in a healthy and a good physiologic venue for weight loss. Sprinting seems to be a really good good for that. So it was winter, and I was doing travel volleyball every weekend. So much harder to eat properly when you're only supposed to be eating meat. And then I gave up the cheese for a while and was doing just meat. And that lasted about January. And then it was just like, oh gosh. Because, you know, you drive to these places, and so eating in the car gets hard. You know, we made it happen, but then, you know, then you stop, and it's like, oh man, some coffee, maybe I'll just have some peanuts. Those aren't too bad. And things like that kind of can derail you when you're really working on trying to get healthier. And then there's team dinners, and, you know, we're going to go to a team dinner. Half the time, there's literally nothing I can eat on the menu, and I eat, like, I order, like, a hamburger and just don't eat the bun and have them bring no fries, and that's my dinner, and then I have to go eat something later because I'm still hungry. But life gets in the way sometimes of your project, so I'm sort of re-emphasizing that right now. I'm going to turn 55 in a couple days here, and I really want to take my year of being 55 and improve my health. I don't know if I can do it to the same degree as I did last year, because it was just such a transform. There's not that much weight left. I mean, even if I lost the 10 that I gained back, I'll lose another 10. I'll be really, that's it. That's all I really think I could lose without starting to get probably too skinny, which is a crazy place. I've not said that very often in my life. So I am going to do, I already have the orders in from my doc to do my cholesterol and things like that. I wanted to check on that a year. Now it'll be more like a year and a half into this carnivore diet and see what's going on. And I'm not opposed to starting a statin, maybe trying it if my cholesterol is still a bit high. It was high 6 months in. Started high and went up a little bit higher. And there are some debates nowadays about how important cholesterol is, but I think everybody needs to you have to look at your own health and your own history, because my dad and my maternal blood grandfather both had what was called the Widowmaker lesion. And so I'm very conscientious about making sure that I don't develop a Widowmaker lesion. And there's a reason they call it that, because oftentimes they don't find it until you have this massive heart attack. So I had a coronary angiogram a couple years ago, maybe 3 or 4 now. So I'll probably get one of those in a year or so and just kind of just make sure, you know, you got to, even if you're taking really good care of your health, you're also genetically susceptible in a way that no other human being is. And isn't that strange to think about? I mean, you know, people don't understand that if you actually, I mean, it's obvious to anyone who has a spouse or a good friend who literally can just eat anything they want, and they're slim, and they seem healthy, and they don't have any problems gaining weight. We all know those terrible, nasty people like that. But, you know, that tells you right there, everybody's body, if my body does not react to carbohydrates, and specifically, I've found that the worst thing for me is grains, mostly wheat. I never did eat tons and tons of corn-based grain stuff. But the wheat, man, it just really just makes me bloaty, and I just don't really feel good. I mean, I love the taste of pizza, don't get me wrong. But I probably had 1 or 2 slices of pizza in the last 18 months. And, you know, I don't eat the buns on the hamburgers, obviously, things like that. That's really been huge and helpful. And so you could take this spring. You know, there's times in the year when it's a really good time to, you know, just, hey, I'm going to put in a new health program. And just, I think that spring and your birthday and New Year's Day are 3 of the big ones that I like to, like to use myself to do that. And while I did New Year's, my New Year's kind of got a little derailed with this volleyball and the winter weather and all that. So I'm going to start again much more strict, and I really haven't been that bad. It's really usually about 1 or 2 days a week when I would eat something that I wasn't supposed to. And it wasn't crazy, crazy stuff, but, you know, it just takes, for some people like me, unfortunately, it takes a full commitment to make any kind of progress. And letting off the gas at all packs pounds on so quickly. It's just such a that's the way of the world, I guess. You know, it's very, very hard to earn money, very easy to spend it. Very hard to lose weight, very easy to put it back on. All the good stuff is all the stuff you really would like to do is just hard, and the stuff that you don't want to happen to you is easy. I don't know why it's set up that way, but anyway, that's kind of seems what I found. And so longtime listeners will remember that I have a dog. I have a couple dogs, a couple Vishlas named Copper and Juniper, who have brought endless joy to our family. My wife gets a little overwhelmed with them because they're kind of wild dogs. But originally I tried hunting with them, and you know, people told me when they're eating and they're young, bang pans so that they're used to loud surprise noises. I only did that a few times, and it cost me insofar as my dogs absolutely don't hunt. And everything I read about trying to cure them of their gun shyness, if you will, it was just very expensive and not at all guaranteed. And I was like, yeah, they'll just be comforters. Well, old Copper Boy, he's 5 now, and he's been limping for about 3 weeks. And my orthopedic opinion, now I don't know how to examine a dog, and I pretty well think I got it figured that it's his hip, both from reading about hips in dogs and then just kind of how he's holding it and how it is when I touch him. So old Copper might have to end up getting a hip replacement, and which is interesting. And luckily my wife, being the smart lady that she is, did get a health insurance policy for our pets, which is just like a wild thing to think about. But here we are, and we got this dog that's going to need a hip replacement, and they're relatively expensive. But I was reading about them, and they basically are just like a hip replacement in a human. It's the same kind of, you know, got to be real careful for 6 weeks after as the bone grows in, and then you can pretty well do anything you want, and it should last your lifetime. And that is, I was kind of worried. I was like, well, if we replace this, does he wear that out? But it says that they shouldn't, even in big dogs, they shouldn't wear out. And that's pretty well what we see on a hip replacement in a human. I think hip dysplasia, which is what my dog has and which some humans have, it's not nearly as common in humans because babies are all examined in the first week or two by the pediatrician, who has been trained to sense if the hips are dysplastic. And dysplasia, hip dysplasia, just means that the hip didn't form right. Usually it's too shallow. And if it's missed at birth, in humans, oftentimes you don't see it until they're in their 30s, because it can be completely asymptomatic until it's not. And then when it's not, you go in, you say, oh, 32, 35-year-old goes in, sometimes even younger, 20s, goes into the doctor, and they say, yep, you have hip dysplasia. It's been there since birth. You have a terrible hip, and now you need a hip replacement. And that's tough. And what I would tell you is, when I was younger in the profession, when I was a resident, we used to say hip and knee replacements would last about a year. There have been a lot of design and materials. So the materials that the implants are made of and designs of the implants, and then, of course, the implantation itself, you know, using the robots. It used to be that if you were in your 30s or needed a hip replacement, they would talk about doing a fusion instead, where they would just bolt the ball to the socket and then that's it. You don't move your hip anymore. I don't hear of that ever happening anymore, because we feel like a hip replacement, even in a young, healthy patient, has a reasonable chance of lasting your whole life. Certainly anybody in their 60s, 50s, or 60s, when you're getting a hip or a knee replacement, we feel like they're going to, if you look at the actuarial tables and the life expectancies, if you're 53 and you have your hip replaced, it should last more than 30 years. Whether you at 53 will last more than 30 years, actuaries would say it's right spot on about that. That's about where men in America die, right in that early 80s, right? That's and you know, of course, there's a wide variety. But my point is that with the modern hip replacements and knee replacements and the techniques that we're using, it's really exciting, because we are able to do it on younger people instead of saying, you know, it used to be, oh, well, unless you're going into a wheelchair, we don't do them until you're 60. Well, that's way old news. That's way, way old news. I would have a knee replacement if I couldn't do what I like to do, if I couldn't ride my bike for exercise and I couldn't do my yard work and things like that, I would get a knee replacement even at 55. I mean, do plenty of knee replacements on 55-year-olds. So yeah, so there's been just these tremendous, tremendous advances. And another thing that's pretty exciting, that is a technological advance, it's not brand new, but it's going to be new to us here at St. Anthony's, is we are going to start doing what's called platelet-rich plasma injections. Now, platelet-rich plasma is a, it's your own blood plasma. So the plasma is the non-blood cell. So you have red and white blood cells, and then you have the plasma, which is the rest of the things in there, things, growth factors, and just different cells and particles in the blood. Specifically, platelets are one of them. Platelets, what one of the things they do is they allow the blood to clot. So if you're cut, you don't bleed to death because your platelets get there and start getting the blood to clot. So the platelet-rich plasma injections will be given in lieu of cortisone injections for patients who want to pay the money. Insurance does not pay for it. There's some good emerging data that it's helpful. I am definitely going to probably get one in my shoulder because my shoulder's been acting up a little bit. I probably will have one in my shoulder. What it is it's the material, this platelet-rich plasma, is profoundly anti-inflammatory. So it really slows down inflammation and lets your body help repair itself. And we're, you know, since insurance doesn't pay for it, people just have, you just have to pay. And it's fairly expensive. It's, well, we've tried to keep it way on the most budget level we can. And there's two different types. And I can go into this in more detail in another day about the two different types. Is one kit that harvests somewhat less and you could use it just for one joint, and that's going to be $550. The other one I think is $750, and you can use it in two joints, or you can give a super buffer injection into your one joint. So some of the things we would use it for was shoulder and knees and elbows, mostly. I don't think we might put them in hips as well. Again, it's called platelet-rich plasma, and it's just we spin it in a centrifuge in the clinic, and it centrifuges it down, gets all the cells out of your own blood, and then we take that, and it's a little bit of a solution in a syringe and inject it into wherever. So I had this particular one, the exact one we're going to use, on my tennis elbow, and I really thought I was going to end up having to have tennis elbow surgery because I wasn't able to do push-ups anymore. You know, if I didn't really do anything, it was fine. And this went on for a long time, and I did give myself a steroid injection, but I didn't want to give a bunch of steroid injections because different parts of the body tolerate steroids differently. The elbow tolerates a couple, but once you start getting into three or four, the elbow can have trouble when you're doing it for tennis elbow. So it took about 4 months, and I would tell you I have zero pain now in my elbow. And I really thought I was headed for surgery. So now, that's not to say that you could be headed for a knee replacement and you get a PRP injection and you're not going to have a knee replacement. It doesn't work that well. This is symptom management and trying to slow down the process. It can be used for rotator cuffs, shoulder arthritis, knee arthritis, tennis elbow, things like that. And the reason we got it is because some patients were asking for it, and they were saying that they were going to Des Moines or Omaha to get platelet-rich plasma. And we thought, well, if patients want it here, let's give PRP. It's just a service we want to offer so that patients don't have to drive far out of town to get it. So we will be offering that pretty, I think we're going to start doing our first injections next week. So if you're interested in platelet-rich plasma, you can just Google platelet-rich plasma and see what it's good for and what it's not good for. It seems to be emerging evidence that it really helps out knee arthritis. Now, is it going to last longer than a cortisone? I don't know. I really can't tell you that. But there are some people who just won't have cortisone either. And so then there's another set of people who might be interested in it. But it's got very, very good data on it for tennis elbow, and like I said, emerging data for knee arthritis and rotator cuffs. So if you're interested in that, you know, give us a call and you can come in and we can talk about those. And otherwise, you know, like I said, it's a spring day. It's a wonderful day to get healthier. And although it's a little windy here in Carroll today, you could still go out and get a nice walk in. But just think about it. Always think, if you're not thinking about becoming healthier, you're probably not becoming healthier. And there's probably very little more important in your life than becoming healthier. So think about that on this lovely spring week. So with that, I will talk to you next week, and you have a blessed week, Iowa.
This has been the St. Anthony Hospital Orthopedic Show with Dr. Richard Godding. For more information about Dr. Godding, his practice, or St. Anthony Hospital Orthopedics, go to www.stanthonyhospital.org or make an appointment by calling 712-794-5536.